pleasantly surprised with this latest edition of Ask Amy Anything. Though we would want to tune it up a little bit. We'd want to fine-tune it, I suppose, was the phrase I was looking for. But I see there's a bunch more questions online. So the ones that Ryan did not ask, I will try to go back and answer. And I'll do so throughout the day on Wednesday if I don't get to them before the end of the show. Just because I gotta sleep. A girl's gotta sleep sometime. But I feel like we've already had some major intel gleaned about Ryan now. For instance, he doesn't like to have to work with his food or get messy in any way for his food. That's all very important information. Also, I didn't say it. It's something that he admitted on the air. He's intimidated by muffins. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, or maybe intimidated by females. I'm not sure. Females with muffins. Note to self. Note to Ryan's next girlfriend. Don't offer him muffins. Ryan, do you have a girlfriend?
No. Too many muffins.
Would you like a girlfriend who bakes?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, but if she offers you a muffin, you're not going to freak out, right?
At 4 a.m. when I don't know them?
What if she happens to work in the building?
That we were told not to date in-house, by the way.
Oh, okay. So we also know Ryan is a rule follower, not a rebel rule breaker. Good to know. All this intel will add to the decision, will help enhance the decision as we make it. It's really funny, too, Ryan. I'm not sure. I know you don't have the official login to the Facebook page, but on our Twix account, people, I guess, feel as though their opinions are necessary for us to make a decision. They'll keep offering their opinions. Well, I like this guy. I like this guy. What about this guy? Yeah, okay. This is not a democracy, nor is it. Oh, what is the line with Princess Leia and Han Solo? He says he doesn't have time to discuss it with the committee, and it's in a really tense spot in Empire Strikes Back. I'm not a committee! Anyway, the committee is weighing in, or the peanut gallery, if you will, weighing in about which producer audition has gone the best and which producer candidate we should choose. We're not even done with the auditions yet, so you're going to have to hold your horses a little longer. However, the hope is to have the next producer in place before we kick off football season. That's all I ask of the managers, all I ask of the bosses. So, yes, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. It's The Hump Show. We'll get to a couple more calls here. 855-212-4227 at A-Law Radio or our Facebook page. And as I say, I'll get back to those as I have the opportunity. Talking a little bit, well, it's July still, so we've got the veritable smorgasbord, the buffet. So talking a little bit about the NFL and the training camps that are nearly in full swing. Couple more that still have to have their veterans report. Also getting set for the Olympics, and I've been doing more and more research that will be fun to share with you as we approach the opening ceremonies coming up on Friday. Something that I will tell you, and maybe I missed it, we were supposed to hear about the female flag bearer on Tuesday. Did I somehow miss the news? Because I haven't seen it. I tried to Google it. I didn't see a name that popped up. But we, of course, know that LeBron James will be carrying the flag for, well, not for the men, but we'll be carrying the flag for Team USA. And the reports are that the female who would be the other half of that tandem, that she was supposed to be revealed on Tuesday, but I haven't seen the name yet. So maybe it will be Diana Taurasi. I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if it was Simone Biles, considering that at 27 years old, she's nearly unheard of, or someone of her age in gymnastics is nearly unheard of. So we'll find out. We'll see what happens as we move forward this week. But yeah, we're nearly there. It's Wednesday morning, and the opening ceremonies from Paris are on Friday. Will be aired in the United States on Friday evening, I should say. So the women's basketball team, they were able to rebound against Germany. And if you consider what their going for, which is completely unprecedented, 8 straight gold medals, 8 straight. That's the type of legacy you can't really ever imagine being matched other than by USA women's basketball or US soccer, except that US soccer, they were unceremoniously dumped before they ever got to the medal round in Tokyo. Was it round of 16, I think, when they lost? And so now you've got them trying to make good on that and find some type of vindication. And the questions were coming for Emma Hayes, who's the head coach of the U.S. women's soccer team. Again, all the expectations, the brightest stars. I know they've kind of gone through a bit of a transformation, some outgoing players and stalwarts that have retired or that are no longer on the team, but they do have good young stars like Sophia Smith making her Olympic debut. And Coach Hayes was kind of pushing back at some of the expectations that can be so heavy on a team like the Americans with all of the medals that they've had in the past, the success at the World Cup level that they've had, and yet they did not win the last Olympics.
Too often we keep talking about, you know, what we're going to do in Paris, you know, or what happens when you get to the semis or the finals. Like, I think it's disrespectful to the rest of the world to talk like that. And I think that the game has moved to a point where that isn't the case. It isn't a shoe-in to get somewhere. It has to be earned, and there's no given right when women's football is developed the way it has across the world, that there are top football nations in this tournament, and any given day, any opponent can beat anyone. Like, I do believe that. I don't think shocks in the women's game exist anymore. I think we need to reframe our focus a little bit and have respect for the rest of the world. At the same time, for us to, you know, get to the places we want to, stay firmly focused on, you know, our process and what we've set for ourselves. For me, that's all I think about.
So that's Emma Hayes, and I think she makes a good point. If you consider that the last Olympics, Canada won its first ever gold medal in women's soccer, and it was Sweden. Now, that's a nemesis for Team USA. They've run into Sweden before, but they lost to Sweden. And so they were then sitting back watching Canada beat Sweden in penalty kicks, ultimately, for that gold medal. So Emma Hayes is trying to make sure her players are not listening to the press, but also that people recognize that the field is stacked. And that's a credit to Team USA, right? Every other nation has had to raise its game. Otherwise, you won't be able to compete with the Americans. And that's partly because of the World Cup success, but also because of what they've done on the international stage so consistently. I hope that they are able to bounce back. I'm looking forward to it. The team chemistry is something that they're working on, right? The men trying to figure out their best combination and find that chemistry themselves without just 2 years to go before the World Cup. The soccer makes me anxious. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Can we talk about the other football, please? I just need to talk about the other football. And also Paul Skeens returning post All-Star break. So we'll get to him about 10 minutes from now. But yeah, in the football world, by far the most notable coaching change and the one that I think will have the most attention on it is the Patriots post Bill Belichick, who will be back into coaching at some point, but man, we're going to see him all over the place in media until he does take a new coaching gig. And Gerard Mayo being a Bill Belichick disciple, but being very different than Belichick. Yeah, there's probably only one Belichick. Even guys who would attempt to coach like him or come from his coaching tree, there's really only one Belichick. And so this is Gerard Mayo's first training camp and an opportunity for him to take on this whole new role and put his stamp on the team.
There are a few things, from a scheduling standpoint. But, you know, honestly, it's been great having a bunch of new coaches in here that I can lean on. And obviously the coaches that we've had in the past that are still here, there really wasn't anything like just huge like that where I'm like, wow, that's different, but it's been good.
One of the things that assistant coaches or former assistant coaches will tell you when they take over as the head coach is all of the media responsibilities. It's administrative, it's media, it's running interference, it's obviously communication with the front office more than any of the other coaches on your staff. There's just a lot of extra conversations that you have to have, a lot of extra talking. That's what I've heard. The biggest thing is there's so much more talking when you are a head coach. So I maybe a lot of them end up in media because they're so primed and developed when it comes to their communication, their talking skills. Although let's be fair, not many people out there probably expected that Bill Belichick's interim gig would be talking for a living. He's so different when he wants to talk. When he wants to talk, he's captivating. I mean, he's charismatic. When he doesn't, nah, not so much. But Jerod Mayo is completely different. So his first training camp with a couple of new challenges, but not a ton. One of them, though, is the quarterback situation, and he's got the young rookie in Drake May, who was drafted number 3 overall, and an old familiar face there in Jacoby Brissett, who has returned to the Patriots.
Coming out of the spring, Jacoby looks like the starting quarterback. Now, with that being said, he'll have competition. There's like, let's not forget about even Joe Milton. Let's not forget about Zappi. All those guys will have opportunities.
Let's not forget about, who is the second guy he said?
Joe Milton.
Joe Milton? I feel like that's already been forgotten. It's only been a few seconds. Stop it. You do not have to hear it from Patriots fans to know if that's their starting quarterback, then something has gone horribly wrong.
Well, he wasn't that bad in college. He was just injured.
It's not about being that bad. That's not a ringing endorsement, Ryan. He wasn't that bad. No. The point is you drafted a quarterback number 3 overall. If somehow it's not Jacoby Brissett and instead it's Joe Milton, there's an issue.
But he's new into the league, Joe Milton, too, so he might be a Brock Purdy situation, you know?
Yes, you're right. I don't have an argument for that, other than if that's the case, you should have drafted him number 3 overall and not wasted your pick on Drake May.
6th rounder.
All right, so I'm excited about this. As I say, it's notable. I can imagine that there are some rational fears and nerves about seeing what happens post-Bill Belichick, but I also think that there is this excitement to this anticipation of a fresh start, an excitement about seeing what life can be post-now Belichick and Brady. And as much as Belichick had a ton of success, he also cast a very large shadow. And so to have him out of the league, at least for now, other than doing media, too, there's maybe a refreshing element to that. Although he will be back. There's no way he doesn't coach again. Some team out there is going to say, to hell with it. We don't care what type of shadow he casts. We need a Bill Belichick to turn this ship around.
New York Giants. Potentially.
I mean, there's a lot of history there with Belichick and the Giants, of course. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Staying in the AFC East, I was fascinated to hear Jordan Poyer, who's now a Dolphin, talk about what it was like in the Bills locker room when they were watching the Dolphins, right? So you keep tabs on the other teams in your division. So he's now a Dolphin, but he's sharing the Bills' perspective on the Miami Dolphins.
Playing against this team over the past few years, you know, you kind of you get a sense of, okay, if you get on top of this team, they might fold. And there's some teams that are, I mean, this is being honest, you know. So what is that happens in those moments to where, like, okay, we get hit in the mouth? You know, what happens in those moments to where, like, hey, we good, let's bounce back, we're good. The game, it's a 60-minute game, it's a long game. So, you know, I've been in games where I've been up 24 points and end up losing. I've been in games and we've been down 21 points and end up winning. So it's just continuing to just play the game. The game is going to come down to the last series, the last play, so just keep playing. Don't get stuck into that play that you didn't make, or don't get stuck into X, Y, or Z of the past. You know, let's just keep playing, keep staying together. That's the biggest thing, too, is being able to stay together as a team. You know, because this is a team game. You know, it's not just one guy. You know, it's everybody. So being able to stick together through those adverse moments, through those ups, through those downs, and just staying on that line all the way through the season.
I do think he brings that level of wisdom and experience and can have that impact on the locker room. And I would say the Dolphins were, so referring to the last couple seasons, a couple pieces away, the leadership away. What did Mike McDaniel say that he was going to carry through this year was 24, right? He's going to say it over and over and over again.
Something about the years since they've won a playoff game.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's 24. The Dolphins fans are now yelling at the radio. Dolphins last playoff win, just so I can make sure that it's the actual 24. Dolphins last playoff game, you dumb butt. Google is messing up right now. Dolphins last playoff win. Yep, 24. That's the number. Blind squirrel. Even a blind squirrel finds a nut. Or what they tell you when they're doing, you're doing standardized testing is always go with your first answer, right? So if you, something pops into your brain and it feels kind of random, always go with your first answer. But then once you start,
sometimes.
Once you start thinking about it, then you change it. But yes, it's the number 24. He's going to pound that number. He said he's going to start every meeting with it. It's going to be on every piece of paper. It's going to be on every computer screen, every slide, or every bit of film they show. The number 24, which was the Dolphins' last playoff victory 24 years ago.
It's so dumb. Very dumb.
It's so dumb. You don't think it's worth the reminder?
Well, half the players on the team
aren't even 24?
Yes.
Just kidding.
Like,
no
fair,
doubt there are a few that aren't 24.
The players that are on the team haven't lost for 24 straight years. I hope not.
Okay, but you know that whether or not you were part of it, now that they're in the franchise, like the Detroit Lions, it's part of their history. You are a Lion. You hadn't had a home playoff game in how long? You're a Dolphin. The franchise itself has not won a playoff game in nearly 24 years, so that now includes you.
I think if you feed into your failure as a player, you're more likely going to have more pressure. If you just focus on this is our team, it's a different year, let's not care about the 24, let's not talk about 24.
Or how about the one that they lost last year?
Yeah, I'd rather say last year.
Well, that's part of it now. You extended that
then
streak.
Last year doesn't count. So it's a new year. Clean the slate.
Last year doesn't count. Also spoken like a true Gen Zer. Last year doesn't count. Now, see, I tend to think failure and losing is a powerful motivator.
To a certain extent. 24 years worth? Not really. At that point, you're running out of time.
Well, the best athletes, the ones who make it to this level, have mental toughness. So they should know better. They're not carrying it around. But still, this is what McDaniel and the coaching staff, these players have been asked to do is like the Lions. Again, what an incredible season they had last year. Finally able to end that very long streak. Very long streak. All right, let's talk to Rajiv, who's in California. Rajiv, welcome to After Hours.
Hey, Amy, how you doing?
I'm great.
You know, when you're talking about like the Olympics and things like that, right? It's like you find yourself watching sports you never ever would watch otherwise, right? Like I would find myself because it was on TV and I'm like, oh, kayaking, like never would watch it. You watch sports like that, right?
Yes.
And then listening to stories of like,
I'm going
to
watch breaking.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to that. Yeah, unlike Chicago Johnny, I'm definitely looking forward to breaking. That looks like it's going to be incredible. The athleticism that you see some of those dancers show is amazing. So, as a kid, that used to sort of do that, you know, back in the day. So, definitely looking forward to watching that.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, listening to Chicago Johnny sort of talk about, like, you know, the history, like, you know, the Dream Team and things like that. So it's always quite a spectacle. So I love the Olympics, you know. I look
Me
forward
too.
To that every year.
And I kind of like the fact that it's only every 4 years. I know in this case it's 3 years, but
absolutely.
The build-up
I agree
to
with
it,
you know, it gives you something to look forward to, you know. You don't get bored with it, you know.
Agreed.
And then when you were talking earlier also about, like, Caitlin Clark, right, and the numbers for the WNBA, that was shocking for me for the All-Star game. From like the first year to that.
Nearly but, you know, 3.5 million people.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, there's been this question like, oh, you know, because I see the tension between Angel Reese, obviously, and people have said, well, you know, Caitlin's get all the endorsements and everything. And people are like, oh, it's, you know, it's because she's white, she's getting all the attention. But I don't think it's that. I think it's more so it's the talent, right? It's like when Tiger Woods came on, right? He was such a phenom that everybody gravitated. Nobody knew, you know, initially when you heard about Tiger, like, oh, is he black, white, or whatever? It's just he's talented. Same thing, I think, with Caitlin Clark, right? Angel Reese. It's like this kind of talent that comes around. So everybody's sort of gravitating towards that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's sort of like my two cents on that.
Yeah.
And then when you were talking earlier also about, you know, I'm going to sort of jump all over the place, but you were talking about Walmart, right?
Stupid
here
policy.
In California, they got rid of the self-checkouts, which is really annoying. So
that
unless
is
you're
annoying.
Like a Uber driver or something. So I used to always self-checkout on my own all the time. Now you have to wait in long lines. So they completely got rid of that. But then you also were talking about how you and your grandfather would, like, eat the food. And then Chicago Johnny was talking about, like,
making
sandwiches
sandwich.
And doing that. So it reminded me of there was that old bit that I think I just saw in a special they did about Bob Newhart. And he said there was, you know, a guy eating celery in the store, right? And he's like, oh, I got to finish this before I get to the checkout counter. And Bob Newhart says, well, that would be stealing, right? And the guy's like, no. he's like stealing is when you walk out with it. This is called snacking.
Yeah, I remember the first time my mom told me you're not supposed to be sampling the grapes, and I thought, why not? But Grandpa always did it. But yeah, I guess as long as it's in your basket or your buggy, we call it a buggy or a cart, whatever people call it, well, then it's yours and you're buying it. So that's what I was saying to Johnny. As long as it's from a package that you have in your buggy.
Yep, exactly. You pay for it. But I just thought that was kind of funny. Uh-huh. And then the fear that he has about your muffins, right? It's like anytime you talk about or you post anything about cooking,
yes,
I definitely think you should have a cookbook or you should post videos or whatever. Because like when you were talking about your wedding, right, you had what was like the white chocolate raspberry coconut cupcakes with the
chocolate
ganache filling.
I am so impressed that
buttercream frosting.
Yes, that you remember that. Did you write that down, Rajiv?
I did, because I was like, this sounds absolutely amazing. So I would love to, you know.
Say it again. Say it again for the people in the back. What kind of cupcakes?
Oh, okay. It was the white chocolate raspberry coconut cupcakes with a chocolate ganache filling and a buttercream frosting. Did I get
so
it right?
Good. Yes, you did. We still have four left in the freezer. Four left.
Oh, that's incredible.
That we will bring out for 9 months and then for our year anniversary.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, definitely. It's like anytime you post those pictures, I would love if you, like on your YouTube channel or something, if you put the recipes of these because... Yeah. Every time you make something, it always sounds amazing, and it makes our mouths water, you know. So.
Awesome. Well, I will try to do that. Now, currently, producer Jay still owns the YouTube channel, which is funny because he's not actually part of the show anymore. But once we have a new producer, then we can get back to doing the YouTube stuff.
Exactly. And then going back to a couple of days ago, when you were talking about seeing Twisters and IMAX,
are you working from a list, Rajiv?
Sort of, yeah. Well, I try to be prepared, just like you're prepared for your show. So I figure as a caller, I should do my homework.
All right, so we'll end on the high note. So what, a couple of days ago, talking about Twisters?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And so people are talking about seeing stuff in IMAX. And I'm absolutely like you, right? Like, you know, once you see it in IMAX, you don't really go. But people are talking about seeing it in 4DX. I would just do a little caution to it because some news reporters were on TV today talking about it, right?
Really?
And the guy's like, I'm still sore from it from yesterday. And you're kind of like, I saw, I think, one of the Star Wars in 4DX. And if you have popcorn or something, it's going to be all over the place. So
really?
I actually find it kind of distracting sometimes.
Wow.
Whereas, the plain IMAX might be better.
So if you're going to do the 4D, you go in without a drink and without popcorn because it'll get all over you.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's funny.
And make sure you don't have any neck issues or something, you know, because there's a lot of shaking in this one.
Oh,
so,
no.
And as people said, they showed people that came out dry, you know, they went in dry and they came out wet. You know,
or they have a crick in their neck. All right. Interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
That's good stuff.
And, speaking of the IMAX, like, you remember when Oppenheimer was released, right? How director Christopher Nolan wanted people to see it in the original 70mm IMAX format?
Yep.
So only 19 theaters, I think there were 30 theaters worldwide, like 19 in the U.S. that were doing it. And so luckily, one of them was in here in California. And they had to, I was fortunate to be able to see it. But it was like, you know, the normal spool is like 6 feet wide. But because the film was 11 miles long, they had to print out an extension for it. And then they also had to fly in a new bulb for the screen because it cost like $10,000 for the bulb.
Holy cow.
And they had to put a hole in the theater to fly in the bulb and see that. But, yeah, it's definitely, you know, whenever you get the chance to see stuff like that, I always say IMAX is the way to go.
Wow, that was a lot there. You backed a lot in, Rajiv, but I agree with you on the majority of the points.
Yep, and I'll just leave you with one thing that you were looking for earlier.
Mm-hmm. I always wanted my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
And pat him and pet him and...
You're hurting me. Put me down, please.
And rub him and caress him and...
Fantastic.
I think I'd leave you with that.
Thank you. I'll talk to you soon, Rajiv. Have a great Wednesday.
You too. Take care.
That's the character we're talking about, right?
I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
Welcome to After Hours, Ryan. All right, we ran a little long because Rajiv had a list. Man, he was prepared. He was prepared. But how about that? He actually wrote down the formula, the magic formula for the wedding cupcakes. That makes him caller number one. He is labeled top fan caller number one. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
even some Cardinals fans. Amazed at what they're seeing tonight from the Pirates' rookie wonder. Here's the 1-2. Swinging a fly ball to left, deeply hit. Back at it, Reynolds to the track. Makes the catch, the inning ends. Skeens has given up just two hits and one run over eight innings.
The 0-2 pitch here for Alec Burleson. A swing, and there's a drive into right. That's a hit. Burleson drives in Ciani. On an 0-2 pitch, Burleson gets a hit to right to put up the run against Paul Skeens.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The calls first on the Pirates radio network and then on the Cardinals radio network. This was a pitcher's duel and new heights, new lengths reached for Paul Skeens, the rookie who started the All-Star game for the National League, making his first post-break appearance. And he goes deeper into the game than he ever has as a pro. Pretty cool that the Pirates gave him a shot to go out there and throw what I guess had the potential to be a complete game, though they were tied at the time. But if nothing else, had the chance to throw a full nine innings until he gave up the Cardinals' go-ahead run there in the ninth. But he did ultimately last 8 1/3 innings and barely got over 100 pitches, which was pretty dang cool to see. The fans were thrilled. They made a ton of noise. They were chanting MVP when he came out for that ninth inning. But yeah, 8 1/3, scattered four hits, couple of earned runs, including those there in that ninth inning, and struck out eight. 104 pitches. Really the only mistake, I guess you could say, would be the pitch to Nolan Arenado that was smacked over the, I think it was left field wall for the home run. Otherwise, he was terrific. And so the fans are getting a show every time he's out there on the mound. And yeah, he hears that the fans are lifting him up.
It was awesome, especially on a Tuesday night. Kind of just shows where we're at as a team, where the city's at. It was really, really cool. Obviously, wish I could have finished it, but yeah, it was a cool moment.
Now, he didn't get more than just the one run from the Pirates offense, though the Pirates did leave seven different dudes on base. But yeah, he's got to be careful. As a rookie, be careful how you answer the question of not getting enough run support.
There's less room for error, for sure. You look at that outing against the Dodgers where they scored seven in the first two, I think. It's easier to pitch there. And the goal there is more to give us length because the margin for error is a lot greater. Margin for error isn't quite as big, so just got to execute pitches a little bit.
It's worth the price of admission, that old adage. But I would say, too, the same thing applies to the way that we phrase the question about the Olympics. Which of the sports and the events are considered must-watch in Paris? Well, while you're navigating the Olympics and all the different channels, goodness, the streaming options, the events that will almost run 24 hours, and we're excited here because we'll be able to watch some of the live events as they unfold. Well, that's Paul Skeens' start now. He belongs in that same category of must-watch. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Also had the Subway Series. It seems like the Mets own the Yankees at this point. But for the Yankees to see Aaron Judge walked four times and put on base four times and stranded four times, it just underscores the issue with them right now is they don't have enough help and support for him. Outside of Aaron Judge and Juan Soto's been good in stretches, they just don't have enough that scares an opposing pitching staff.
It's not really too frustrating. You know, I wouldn't mind that day, you know, when it comes to the win. So it's part of it. You know, it's a team game. You know, even if I went 4-for-4 today, you know, we still might not win. So it's just about if I get a pitch to hit, I got to do some damage on it.
So for him to be on base those four times, what did he do the other one? He struck out, right?
Struck out the ninth inning.
1K in the ninth inning and had the four walks. They were only one was labeled intentional, but you could tell that they were pitching around him and not wanting to give him a whole lot to hit. So, yeah, Mets manager Carlos Mendoza, they made that call to pitch to him in the ninth inning.
Obviously, we knew they were going to pinch hit Rice. So I went out there to, you know, talk to them about the situation. That not only we're going to walk Judgy, but they're going to pinch hit the lefty here, and kind of talk to Hefner before I went out there, kind of like put together a game plan and how we're going to attack him. It worked, obviously.
Yes, it did, as the Mets were able to hold off the Yankees. Last time the Yankees scored was in the sixth inning, and so they had some guys on base, but they, too, were unable to capitalize on their opportunities. 11 different runners that were stranded, and they were 1-for-9 with runners in scoring position. So, yeah, if you take the risk and it works out, it kind of shows other teams that, all right, well, until the Yankees step up and the lineup around him, the top half of the order, just not a whole lot working for them. And that middle part of the order, too, to try to get some kind of a rhythm, some type of offense that can be contagious. Yes, the Yankees are sitting on 60 wins, and it's the same number of wins as the Baltimore Orioles and the Guardians. So it's not as though with this hideous stretch they've gone through, what was it, 9-20 before this game. And so adding this on top now, you're talking about a stretch of 9-21. And yet they are still right there at the top of the AL East and have a tie for most number of wins in the American League. And yet it's got to be frustrating. They can't seem to get enough support around Judge. And whether or not he's frustrated, the fans definitely are. The rest of the lineup definitely is. But the Mets, they're above 500 now. They've been able to turn their season around from where they started early in the year, early in the springtime. And they definitely have owned the Yankees this season. Aren't they 3-0 now against them in the Subway Series with one more game to come? Yeah. All right. Online, you can find us almost at On Twix again. Some people get so mad about it. So mad. On Twix, online, at A-Law Radio, and then our Facebook page, too, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. A little more football to sprinkle in and shove you forward into your hump day. You got this. I believe in you. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Toward the top of the hour, it's our hump show, wrapping it up. It is your hump day if you're just waking up on a Wednesday. Let's hope we're all as prepared to attack the day as Rajiv, who called us from California earlier this hour and had a list. He was ready to go. Thank you again for all your questions, for Ask Amy Anything. We kind of shoehorned it in there. I wasn't sure if we were going to do it. It turned out that it was fine. Fine is the baseline. I don't love fine. I feel like fine is average. My mom is always calling things fine. It's fine. Mom, I don't want to be fine. Fine is boring. It's average. It's the mean. It's the median. It's middle of the road. Fine is good. No. Fine is not good. Fine is fine. The number of times we've had this conversation in my life, it would be astounding to you. So I don't like fine as much, but for now, while we're navigating the summer and a lot of the different changes, fine is okay. I'll take fine. Fine is better than a blow up, right, Ryan? You're not blowing up anything in there, are you?
Not yet.
Not yet. There's still time. Except I think this might mark the end of your audition.
I don't know. I'm just here.
What?
They don't tell me much.
Well, I'll tell you what they told me then. It's fine because none of the bosses actually listen to the show, so they'll never know. What they told me is that each of you would have 5 or 6 shows. And this is your sixth, or our sixth together, since producer Jay said peace out. So this would be your last one. I think I've got a couple more with Colton this week, and then Manny next week. So this might be it. Now, since you and I have established this pattern where you only talk to me when we're working, he laughs because he knows it's true. Now, why is that? It's because you're typically doing morning shift and you're still waking up?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not me, is what you're saying.
No, it's not you.
But it's a thing, you guys. When Ryan and I are not working together, but he's in the newsroom, I will say, good morning, Ryan. And what I get is a hi. But then we're working together. He's a chatterbox, which is good. It's radio, so you kind of need to be able to chatter. but not when we aren't working together. So I don't know. I'm a little bit nervous about that fact. But since, let's just say, for the sake of argument, this is your last show before the auditions are done. Any famous last words you'd like to say?
Live, laugh, love. Like a Hallmark card.
Do you
think
that's going to help you get the job?
No, I was put on the spot, though.
Oh, well. What about, do you like, how much do you feel like you've learned in the last couple weeks?
A lot. A lot of things. Good answers, good answers.
I guess I've learned don't put Ryan on the spot.
It's like Family Feud where the person obviously has a terrible answer and they just go, great answer, great answer.
That is absolutely my favorite game show, though. I love Family Feud. If we could ever get my family on it, it would be terrific. We would be just a train wreck. It'd be awesome. It'd be so funny. My sister-in-law, I'm not sure who would be the leader. That's the funny part, is because we have, in my family, we have, well, my brother and I, so my closest younger brother, I have two younger brothers, but the closest one to me is 15 months. That's Matthew. He's the one that walked me down the aisle. Matthew and I are loud Italian personalities, as you can imagine, and both very competitive. My sister-in-law is, so my brother's 6'5", my sister-in-law is 5 foot nothing. She's teeny tiny. She's Filipino, but also very opinionated and a bit of a control freak. I love you, Veronica. So she knows it. She would say that. Then we have my oldest niece, who is classic millennial. Millennials run the world. Do whatever makes you happy, fearless, doesn't matter. I'm going to do what works best for me. You do what works best for you. I tell everyone else what to do, type of a thing. She would absolutely want to be the captain of the team. But I kind of feel like I'm the one who's got the media experience, so maybe I should be the captain of the team. And then we'd have to fill it out. So that'd be four of us. I don't think my mom's husband would want to be on it. I think my mom would be a star. Plus, she's full of knowledge because she's a teacher. But I don't know how quick she is under pressure. I think mom would forget to slap the button really quickly, or she would do it and then she would not have an answer ready. So yeah, my mom tends to freeze up a little bit when it comes to not talking in front of teenagers, but talking when there's a big audience that's paying attention to her. So she might be a liability in that respect.
It can't be that bad.
No. She's amazingly smart. She's the smartest person I know, but what if she froze up in those moments?
I feel like I would freeze up.
Feel like you would too, actually.
No, I would say something really dumb where like Steve Harvey would look at me and judge me.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd be like, laugh at me. And then he points at the board and he had the giant buzzer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd buzz in.
Survey says,
It would just be a low point in my life, getting buzzed by Steve Harvey.
Yeah, I can imagine. I feel like with all of the expectations that I put on myself, if I failed miserably, if it was me that failed miserably, I wouldn't mind if it was another family member, then I would try to lift them up and make them feel better. But if I failed miserably, that might be it. Little known fact about Amy Lawrence, in high school, I was on a game show with my best friend and a couple of other nerds. We were part of what was a New Hampshire game show in which it was students pitted against students from other schools. And it was that same kind of thing. It was a quiz show, but it was for high school students. We actually won a couple rounds and got to move on, which was fun. I don't remember who was the captain. I'll have to ask my best friend. But not that long ago, I discovered a photo of us. We were seniors, all dressed up for our game show appearance on local cable TV in New Hampshire. No, you cannot see the photo. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. You might not even recognize me. I would never live that down. But I will say, unlike Ryan, I always was ready to talk, even if I didn't necessarily have the answer. I was always ready to weigh in and buzz. Have you thought about it a little bit? I'm trying to talk so you can think about it.
I've got Mr. Unlimited stuck in my head.
Oh, okay. Let's hear it. I miss Russell Wilson.
Mr. Unlimited. Sorry. To pull a clip up real quick.
Oh, should I keep talking?
I'm unlimited. You know what I mean? So when they ask you certain questions like,
who brings you motivation, Russell?
Oh, no.
Mr. Unlimited.
It's bad.
I forgot how corny that was. So I actually thought I had time. I ate a blueberry. Sorry. I'm hungry. It's that part of the show where I get really hungry. So I was thinking about Russell Wilson's trek through the NFL and how crazy it's gone off the rails since He was traded from Seattle. But then I was thinking about Denver, and I'm not sure who's in a worse situation, the Denver Broncos or Russell Wilson. At least he's still getting paid and has another starting job, and now Sean Payton's got to find his QB.
Look, the number one goal is to find the right 53 players here for our team. Certainly there's a lot of focus on the quarterback position because there's open competition there. But I don't look at it as finding the balance. I look at it as finding the player.
Seriously? You
got three players.
I already don't like him. It's only been 1 year. I feel like the last few coaching hires from the Broncos they've had huge egos. Have they learned nothing from Josh McDaniels? Huge ego. He showed that in Denver. Then he showed it in Vegas. That should have been a cautionary tale. Remember what happened when he was our head coach? And now they bring in Sean Payton, who also has a big ego. It's one of those got to go backward before you go forward things. I say just throw Bo Nix out there. It can't be worse than Zach Wilson. It just can't be. Oh, no. I can't talk about it anymore. Have a great day. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Boom!